Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We started this podcast because we love having conversations with one another, with our friends, with other women, and we crave connection over thoughtful dialogue. So that's what we do here. We try to cover topics and interview incredible women who are doing amazing things in this world. And every once in a while, we just can't help ourselves and we have to discuss a topic that you and I would have been on the phone lamenting and discussing and trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yes.
And so we thought we'd explore it here on the podcast because I think we both know that everyone else is talking about this too.
Yeah.
We're all just trying to figure this out.
Right. So today we are exploring this thing you've been tweeting about and texting your friends. We've touched on it before here on the podcast, but we thought it needed further discussion because of recent news events. We wanted to discuss rape culture, what it means, how it's perpetuated, who's at fault, how does it play out in our lives, what are the repercussions for us as women, and also for our children. And then because it's you and me, Leslie, we of course will get into some ways that we think we are uniquely positioned as mama bears to help move the dial forward.
Absolutely.
It's going to get a little hot. It's going to get a little hot in her. But I think we should just go for it.
Let's do it. So rape culture is designed to show the ways in which societies blame victims of sexual assault and normalize male sexual violence. So even though the term rape culture was started by feminists in the early 1970s, it's really become more of a mainstream idea because of the headlines.
Right.
Most recently, Brock Turner. And we did a podcast covering this. It was episode 30. We will link that. And we had quite a discussion on him. But also, there's a prevalence of rape on college campuses. And then, of course, the audio from Donald Trump on a bus.
Right. I mean, obviously, you and I believe we have a bona fide rape culture here in America. And it can probably go without saying that we believe it's an area, again, that our mama bear is just ripe for action. But the focus is often on our daughters. You've noticed this, right? Mm-hmm. And we believe that misses the mark and think anyone with a daughter or a son should be equally infuriated. Actually, you don't need kids. You don't need kids. If you're a human.
If you're a human,
you should be infuriated. Actually, I think my dog, equally infuriated. Everybody should be infuriated. So, Leslie, let's kind of get into how it's perpetuated.
Okay.
Because we defined it.
We defined it.
Now, how's it perpetuated?
So much of our culture in general is just infused in the fiber. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly how it started and how it continues to play out. I think rape culture is a little bit different. I think if you're paying attention, it's actually really easy to see the myriad of ways that male sexual violence shapes, really, unfortunately, the entire narrative of this country. In Trump's latest tape, where he talks about grabbing women in the vaginas and kissing them, even if they didn't necessarily want it, that is classic rape culture.
Right.
Right? It's pretty easy to see that. However, what is also rape culture is actually Billy Bush, the man who was interviewing Trump at the time. In the audio recording, you can hear Billy laughing and kind of egging Trump on. Because our culture celebrates this specific kind of male fraternizing at the expense of women who have been assaulted, it also is classic rape culture.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's a lot like we're getting into another podcast in the future about implicit bias. It's a lot like that. People, obviously, Donald Trump's was in your face, right? A lot of people were talking about him. Not many were talking about Billy Bush, even though he, too, was part of it. You know, I posted about this, of course, because my mama bear was poked, baby. It was poked, okay? And much of the pushback from people was, this is just boys being boys. This is heard throughout every locker room in the country. Like, people were saying this, right? And they still are. And then they'll go on to say, you know, is it okay? No. Is it normal? Yes. And there again, it's this vicious cycle of saying, well, it's not our favorite thing in the world, but who are we to stop something so innate in the DNA of our country? You guys, we are. Like, as mama bears, we are the ones to stop it, you know? And it comes back to this, if not us, then who?
Absolutely. I mean, we can change this thing. I truly believe that. So first, Tessie, I think let's take a quick pause and let's say that this episode is not meant to be all political.
Right.
We're not going to get into politics at all. We really, really, really are just wanting to call out rape culture when we see it. For now, we're withholding our opinions on how this kind of latest revelation affects our views of Trump as a candidate. But we really are wanting to just show it as an example among many of how pervasive this whole thing is in America.
Yeah. When the news broke of this audio, an author named Kelly Oxford, if you guys don't already, you should follow her on Twitter and Snapchat. She's amazing. But she tweeted about the first time she was assaulted. And then she asked for other women to tweet their stories as well. She used the hashtag not okay. Mm-hmm. You guys, she was getting... This gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, but she was getting 2 tweets every second for hours, and then for days it's been trending because so many women have stories like what Trump was talking about. There's the outright rape that we can say, like there's been sexual rape that's happened, right? But mostly there were these stories of just the many times men grab them on the subways or in doctor's offices. These small little microaggression assaults.
Mm-hmm. I know. And some of these tweets, as I was reading, they told stories of women, of girls that were as young as 5 or 8 years old. And one thing was clear, these things were happening to everyone. Yes. So it was not one race or one socioeconomic kind of person. Mm-hmm. It's a rape culture. The fact that so many women have had this experience, and honestly, most have had multiple experiences like this, where men felt entitled to do whatever they wanted, this is rape culture.
Yeah. In our episode with Brock Turner, I talked about one of the things that had happened to me. And I'm sure like you can come up with any number of times that this sort of thing happened. And it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Rape culture can be as simple, you guys, as catcalling. This idea that a woman walks by and a man is entitled to call out in really vulgar sexual ways. I mean, rape culture essentially is just when a woman is treated or talked about as an object, especially so casually, right? That's rape culture.
I mean, I was telling you just a week ago, I was at the YMCA and a car full of high school boys started yelling and saying, "Mama, mama, suck you, suck," like terrible.
Yes.
I mean, we can do better. And I think mama bears, we are in that place. Mm-hmm. Even we can do better.
Yeah.
So the original way that rape culture was kind of brought up in the early 70s was just this fact that when a woman does press charges against her rapist, her entire life will be called into question. So instead of shaping the narrative around the violence surrounding the rape, the narrative is always shaped around the woman. What was she wearing? Mm-hmm. Was she drunk? Was she the one who initiated a physical contact, like with a kiss or something similar? Rape culture makes it about the victim and not about the perpetrator.
Yeah, that's important. That's an important distinction. We have these high-profile cases right now that prove that it's happening. It seems like it comes out every year with these really, really high-profile cases. Of course, we have the Brock Turner. We have Bill Cosby. Mm-hmm. We have Derrick Rose from the Chicago Bulls. Before that, we had Kobe Bryant. And in each of these cases, the blame has been shifted from these high-profile men to the lower-profile women. Even though these specific cases have a variable where the aggressor is famous or wealthy, it's really indicative of how rape cases are handled when neither person is famous as well. I mean, this is always happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of being part of our culture, right? Yeah. It's that it's in that same vein that they're... have been some really shocking numbers coming out of colleges, right? And about just the extremely high number of rapes that occur on campuses. And I should say, it's shocking to people who have never been, one, a woman, or two, in college. But if you've been one or both of those things, then actually, I mean, it's sad and it's terrible and shocking in some ways, but it's not altogether
shocking. It's not, right.
Which really should be alarming enough. Mm-hmm. But most college rape cases specifically, they go unreported for any number of reasons. One of them often, though, is that the women see what happens to other victims in court, and they don't want any part of it. Who can blame them, right? Especially if they'd been drinking or if they'd had a history of multiple sex partners, even though in no way does that make the rape justified, who's going to be signing up to be publicly damned like that?
Oh, my gosh. I know. It's really a perfect example of how oppressing rape culture is for women. And I hope that's a more obvious example. Though there are undoubtedly people on the fringes who think it's okay to blame the victim, for the most part, people see this as a tremendous stain on our system, don't they? Don't you agree?
Yeah.
What most people don't see, however, is how this kind of lens, this victim shaming or blaming lens, really seeps out into the rest of our verbiage, thoughts, and actions.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually talking to one of our other sisters-in-law, Kate, who's been on the podcast before, and she brought up this idea that I hadn't thought of, just kind of speaking about how it seeps out into the rest of our world. She said, you know, even the fact that we laugh and we joke about rape in prisons shows just how casually we consider it. The fact that we think anyone deserves rape is proof that we don't fully understand the traumatizing nature of it. Mm-hmm. Is that not so profound?
Yeah, I, you know, hadn't really thought about it in that respect before either, but it really does highlight just this pervasiveness, again, in our culture. It doesn't stop there either.
Right.
There are entire movies that are centered around the hilarity of prison rape culture. And the word rape really is thrown around in our vernacular, like, I've heard people say, that feels kind of rapey, or I totally got raped by that office bill, that doctor's office bill. These are things that, you know, are seep into the culture and the vocabulary that we use.
Yeah, you know, and they're not bad people saying it. It reminds me of how the word retarded, do you remember how that used to be? People used to just throw that around flippantly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like rape is really like that too, because like you said, these are not bad people referring to how expensive the bill was.
Right.
It's everywhere. Like that's what we mean by rape culture, that it happens in the small ways and the big ways as well. Because we say it all the time, when you know better, you do better, but first comes the knowing, right? So those are just some of the ways. There are so many more that we could have talked about.
Yeah.
But those are just some of the ways that it's perpetuated.
Yeah. So how about the repercussions?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about repercussions of this climate that we live in, of this rape culture. For me, one of the most heartbreaking repercussions of all of this is that some women have gotten so used to this kind of treatment that they actually don't see anything wrong with it. When the audio tapes of Trump came out, I saw so many women excusing the behavior by saying something like, men have been doing that for decades. You know, I can't say that I know anyone that wasn't appalled by that talk, but I was still struck by how many women have become so immune to how damaging this kind of rhetoric is that it could be excused so easily.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a great example of how pervasive it is. Like, if some of the people most affected, i.e. women, aren't even offended anymore. I mean, ladies, wake up. We have so much more to offer the world than our bodies. We should always and forever have a zero tolerance policy for this kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you end up voting for Trump is really up to you. But we need to be calling out all kinds of assault, objectifying, or icky kind of like voyeurism behavior like that. I mean, this is a zero tolerance policy.
I agree. And I feel your mama bear. And I'm with her for sure. Yeah, so it's this culture that has made some women just seemingly kind of nonplussed by this really terrible rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
We also discussed how rape culture has really brought on this blanket of silence for victims. So many rapes go unreported, again, because they assume, rightfully so, in way too many cases, that they'll somehow be blamed for the assault and that the assailant will go free. And this is just another terrible repercussion.
Yeah. I also think because we shrug things off to locker room talk, men feel like there are safe spaces to objectify women. I feel like it should go without saying, but clearly I don't really feel like that because I'm about to say it. But there should be no safe spaces to do that, right? Mm-hmm. The locker room mentality contributes to really terrible assaults within the locker room, too. It's one thing to talk about this kind of assaulting behavior or outright rape. But there's also been cases like the Steubenville High School in Ohio where a woman was sexually assaulted in a locker room. And you guys, multiple adults have been indicted for obstructing the investigation because, again, this is the underbelly of okaying a safe space for this. Mm-hmm. Because now adults are saying, it's in the locker room. Like, you guys know there are no safe spaces for this, and we should never allow for a place where the worst part of our natures is allowed to go unchecked. There's nothing like that.
No.
And that is clearly what much of America sees in this idea of the locker room, right?
Ugh. Yeah. It's just sickening. It really, too, allows for men in power, in particular, to assume that they can do what they want to women just because of their fame or their money or their power, and they'll never be held accountable. Mm-hmm. This doesn't just begin and end with Donald Trump, obviously, though he was the only one, to our knowledge, that has so readily voiced this.
Right.
But we also brought up Bill Cosby and Brock Turner and Derrick Rose, and you said Kobe Bryant, and then there's Woody Allen.
Right.
And, like, the list could literally go on and on for podcast
yes.
after podcast.
Right.
And there's a reason, I think, that powerful men think that they can get away with it. And it's sad. It's because they mostly do.
Right.
I feel like their victims rarely have the money or the platform or the popularity to fight them on the charges. And so, again, their voices are silenced.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Bryant recently retired, and all of the videos and montages of him talking about his brilliance on the court, his longevity of the game, these all happened. I didn't see a single one that talked about the rape case he was involved in. That's rape culture,
mm-hmm.
plain and simple.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys, these are all really major examples of the repercussions of rape culture, but there are also smaller ones. Like anything else, these big ones have a way of filtering down into the minutiae as well. For our daughters, this complicates their ideas and experiences of sex and their sexualities in general. You know, they have to get really comfortable with saying no. And because of the rape culture, this part is not okay, but our rape culture tells them that the burden mm-hmm. is on them to say no rather than for our boys to get a yes,
mm-hmm.
right? And women have to be constantly vigilant of their surroundings, particularly if they have been drinking. Our male listeners might be surprised to hear this, but when I was in college, we always designated a sober friend. And I know what you guys are thinking. Well, yeah, that's smart for driving. No, in college, we use the bus. She wasn't our sober driver. She was the one that was on lookout, who would watch our drinks to make sure nothing was slipped in them. And she made sure no one went home with a man if or when she was too drunk.
Mm.
This is a thing,
yeah.
a real thing
yes.
that needs to happen, that often happens, I should say, in female circles.
In some ways, it's a terrible world for women to live in, that they have to be so hyper-vigilant in all situations like that. Of course, it doesn't end with our daughters, though, right? I mean,
yeah.
this also plays out for our sons. So let's just take a moment to really reiterate that sexual assault and rape does not just happen to one race or one class or even one sex. It does not discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have time to get into the nuance of all of those specific groups, but we do want to recognize that they're there.
Yeah.
And just to let you know that we've posted some really great articles about more of the nuance of this issue in the show notes. So please go there if you're curious. It can probably go without saying, though, that males can be victims of sexual assault
right.
as well. Even though we focus heavily on females here, rape culture really speaks to the idea that men are told that they can have whether or not they first establish consent.
Yeah, and so the way this plays out in our sons is they grow up feeling really entitled to women's bodies, whether entitled to just stare at them
mm-hmm.
for uncomfortable amounts of times or touch them. They are told in our culture that we, as women, are objects and we're not actually human beings. this message clearly is reinforced in everything, in marketing, in TV, in movies, in music, in literature. This doesn't make our kids bad, right? It really just makes them part of the culture. And obviously, if they continue this kind of thought through puberty and manhood and keep perpetuating this dark side of our culture, that's a whole different story as to whether they're, you know, goodness or badness. But at least initially, as with anything else, our sons are just born into a male entitlement culture. And I feel like this is where we can come in as mama bears, don't you think?
Absolutely. There are ways that we can do this, that mm-hmm. we can try to fix this and be part of the solution. There are things that we can do. We have power in this situation as women and as moms. I truly believe that there are ways that we can engage and turn the tide a little bit.
Yeah, one of my friends' mother-in-law, this made me just think of it, said she believed women were just too sensitive about the Trump thing, okay? This immediately like raised the hair on my neck because I've always been accused of being too sensitive. But you know what? Get sensitive. Don't let anyone tell you that being sensitive is a bad thing. Ever. Don't ever let anyone tell you that. Be awake. You're not sensitive. You're awake to the good and to the bad, you guys. And so this is what we always encourage you to be on this podcast. You have to be awake because only the awake ones understand the perils of the world. And then they're able to also understand the complexity. And then they're able to set to fixing it or at the very least offer hope.
Yeah. I agree. I'm also very sensitive.
Sensitive mama bears unite.
That's right. So I think first, Tessie, we have to name it. Mm-hmm. So you pass young men talking about women in a derogatory way, you name it.
Yep.
You tell those boys what it is and what it does. Your husband and his friends say something not really bad, but still just has that twinge.
Yeah.
Just enough to make you a little uncomfortable. Hey guys, not cool.
Yes.
You have to name it, and you can't be afraid to stop it really in that moment that it's actually happening.
Right. And notice, like you said, husbands there. Again, mm-hmm. not bad guys, mm-hmm. part of the culture, right? But we have to be the ones to stop it, and at least initially.
Yeah.
Because then not only will they know that you're listening and paying attention, but guess who sees it? Your kids see it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes second nature for them to do it as well. So let's maybe get into how we can help as moms, dads, aunts, uncles, grandparents, what have you. We have the whole gamut listening, right? How do we stop this train in its tracks? I thought we should start with boys because between our 8 kids, 6 of them are boys.
True.
And I also very firmly believe it's actually on the boys and the men to fix this. Like we can identify it, but it's up to them to fix it because the burden shouldn't. It does currently, but it should not fall on the women. Mm-hmm. And if women could fix it, hello, we already would have fixed it. So let's equip our boys with the resources to fix it.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Do you have any ideas?
I think we could start with just this idea of hypermasculinity and how it is toxic to our culture. And it totally contributes to the rape mm-hmm. culture. So what does it mean? It's this idea that our culture discourages boys from crying and from expressing emotions. You guys have heard it. Man up or suck it up. These are phrases.
You know how I feel about those phrases.
They're toxic because mm-hmm. then there's all of this pent up, just unchecked emotion. And there's really no positive outlet.
Right, because they're supposed to deny them. Right. So, of course, there's no outlet for them, right? I have to say we have got to monitor media for our boys. Mm-hmm. I really, really want to get an expert on porn and teenage minds on the podcast. So if you guys know someone who'd be really great, please, please email us. Yeah. I think that'd be really powerful. But for now, I think we just need to say that, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but you guys, your kids have access. And they will see porn at some point. It is not if, it is when. Mm-hmm. You can do everything you can, and you should do everything you can to control it. But then make sure there's just a continuous open dialogue about what porn is, the dangers of it, not just to their own psyches. I mean, there are some very real dangers happening mm-hmm. to our young boys' minds, but also to the women, right? And to their future girlfriends or wives.
Yeah, hard conversations, but
Have to.
Mm-hmm. You know, in that same vein, I think it would be wise to have, you know, your husband, your partner, a male friend talk to boys, our sons, about really the pressure of glorifying conquests rather than intimacy. Mm-hmm. So this is so often just accepted. It should be part of the narrative of our sons' lives. You know, just to have these conquests and be a man because of it. But we need to make sure that they know that women are never meant to be conquered, but they are meant to be cherished and respected. Mm-hmm. This is true. I mean, whether you are their girlfriend, boyfriend for a month, or whether you are with this person for a few years or your entire life, they're never meant to be conquered. It's about respect and love and cherishing.
Yeah, and I think that can be more powerful coming from a man because they've been through it, right? Mm-hmm. I also think a few years ago, my kids were actually with me, just my boys, the three oldest boys, when we passed a man in a hotel that looked at me and then said some really, really inappropriate stuff about what he'd like to do to me. Mm-hmm. And this was, again, in front of my kids. My boys were just 10 or 11 or so, you know, around that age at the time, but it really stuck with them. So for me, it's really easy for me to say, hey, you guys, you remember how horrified you were when that man said those really terrible things? Well, that's what it feels like every time women are catcalled. Mm-hmm. Whether it's as simple as, hey, you're hot, or the not so simple things that they heard, unfortunately, it feels the same to women. Mm-hmm. That kind of catcalling feels the same to women. So make sure your boys know that it feels like an assault, right? That maybe they're just in their heads, they're like, I'm going to tell that woman she's beautiful. It's still assaulting when you're yelling it at us, right? So whether or not you meant it to be that way, it still victimizes the woman. So they can't do that. It's again, a zero tolerance policy here.
Yeah. And if, you know, if your boys see this happening and they just think, oh, people must do that, you need to be the one to tell them that, no, this actually feels really awful.
Yeah.
And don't be a part of that.
Yes. Yeah.
I think if your boys are at an age where they're talking about girlfriends or they're wanting to introduce you to girlfriends, stress whether they are kind or smart and not what they look like. Mm-hmm. So if the first way that they describe this new love is something physical, I think you can voice it. I think you can say, you know, hey, I'm glad you find her appealing, but remember, she's so much more than what she is on the outside. So what is she into? Is she funny? Like, is she a really hard worker in school? I know that our boys would appreciate really even just knowing that little trick, right? Like, girls want to feel appreciated for more than just their looks or their bodies. So help educate your son. Let him know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're giving them, again, an example of how to say that, right?
Yeah.
Perhaps the biggest one is consent. I mean, it seems like it'd be a natural thing, but consent is a tricky one to talk about. But we brought this up on the Brock Turner podcast, which, again, you guys will link to in the show notes along with those other articles that we mentioned. But it needs to start from a very young age. Like, if you see your preschooler grab another preschooler's hand, talk to him about asking her first, you know? Or if you hear him wrestling with someone and he doesn't stop even after they ask him to, you stop the play, moms or dads, and you talk to him about consent. Mm-hmm. Use the word consent. You have to get them familiar with the word consent. Say, you don't get to touch anyone without their consent. When they say stop, they're telling you that you no longer have consent. So that as they get older, you're going to need to be a little more specific. You're going to need to tell them, like, in sexual situations, whether it's kissing, handholding, whatever, only a yes is a yes. Mm-hmm. Only yes is yes. If a woman shrugs, it's a no. If she says, I don't know, it's a no. If she doesn't say anything, still a no. Only a yes is a yes. I tell my boys all the time, I don't care how awkward it feels to say, can I hold your hand? Or something similar. It does not even compare to how awkward it feels to say no when a boy is putting his hands on you when you didn't want it. The burden is on them, on the boys. Make sure that they know that.
Amen.
All right, get into the girls. What can we do as girl moms?
Okay, as girl moms, listen up. So the first thing I think that you need to do is make sure that they know, as we've been talking about, that they know that the onus is not on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, encourage them to be safe and smart. But no matter how safe and smart you are, sexual assault can still happen. Mm-hmm. It can still happen to you, but it will never be your fault. So I really think that girls need to know that you'll always support them and back them or any of their friends if the worst does happen, so that they'll feel comfortable coming to you if it does.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's when they're 10 and a boy touches their vagina on the playground, or if it's in college and it's worse, they need to know that it's not their fault and that you will believe them no matter what.
Yeah, this is how we can stop rape culture, is to break through the silence, mm-hmm. right? And I think we also need to just be constantly aware of making sure that our daughters and the ladies of this world have so much more to offer than their bodies or their beauty. Your daughter's beautiful? Awesome. Like, awesome. But make sure that's not the focus of your praise constantly, you guys. And it's hard, right? Especially when they're like 2 or 3 and everything they do is cute, right? They're just constantly cute. Just make sure that that's not the focus of your praise constantly, because here's the rub, okay? As parents, as grandparents, as aunts and uncles, you actually set the stage for the kind of love they know and expect from future loved ones. So make sure that they're demanding someone who will keep the focus on what they have to offer the world with their ideas and their heart, and not what they have outside.
Yeah. Hundo. So related, even though you want to focus on just all those incredible aspects of your daughter, your niece, or whomever it may be, it is okay to embrace femininity.
Yeah.
So again, rape culture doesn't actually have anything to do with women, meaning we can't make it better or make it go away by acting a certain way or wearing different clothes.
Yep.
So let your daughters hear you talk about why you wear what you wear, how it makes you feel, you know, when do you feel confident? When do you feel sexy? Don't be afraid of that in front of them, because we don't want them to feel shame in their femininity either.
That's such a good distinction too, to make sure that they know that there's like nothing shameful about it, right? Because rape culture does try to shame us,
yeah.
But that was such a good point. You guys, we've got to monitor their media, too. Like, newsflash, girls are seeing porn at younger and younger ages, too. In the same way you're doing for your sons, do what you can to control it. But remember, you can never control what they see 100%. But you can control what they hear you say about it. So you need to talk to them about how porn contributes to rape culture. You need to talk about how they should never feel pressure to perform like a woman in these movies. You need to tell them what it's like in a loving, respectful sexual relationship. That's awkward, right? But because porn is becoming more and more normalized in younger generations, you really have to make sure your daughters know that the only way they need to be comfortable is with themselves. They don't need to make the man comfortable. They don't need to be doing the things that he's seeing, right? If it feels good to them, okay. But if it doesn't, no. Mm-hmm. End of story.
Yeah. And again, I think consent is key with girls too. And I think we can honestly just have them practice saying no and saying stop. If they're wrestling around with their brothers and you can tell just on their faces that they actually don't want to be playing anymore, then tell them to use their voice forcefully.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see them react to anything, but then internalize it instead of voice it, talk to them about how we really have to use our voices to say what we like and we don't like. Practice, again, makes it easier. So encourage this as often as you can.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So you guys, again, we can't say it enough. This is just barely scratching the surface, right? But in general, I do think our culture sexualizes kids younger and younger, you know? I know you hate like preschool girlfriends and boyfriends, right?
I do.
And we've all had that like, oh, give your friend a kiss when they're really young. And it's innocent. I mean, you know, like the parent thinks it's innocent, but it really does contribute to this as well. And it's the same with, you know, even I think I told you last year, my sixth grader, they were going to like the co-ed dance at school. And, you know, he had a quote unquote girlfriend, which means nothing. They didn't go on dates or, you know, I mean, they didn't do anything besides see each other at school. But I got to the dance to take a picture, and I had found out that a bunch of other quote unquote sixth grade couples had went to dinner, had gotten their pictures taken at houses, had done all of this that like I had saved for my prom, you know? And again, it's innocent. Like, it's not like these parents are purposefully sexualizing their kids, but still in sixth grade, of course there's some interest, but it's not that way. Like, that's kind of forcing that really sexualized relationship sooner than it needs to be, you know?
Yeah. I think good aunts and uncles or cousins are trying to relate to your kids and maybe ask, like, if they've kissed their girlfriend or some other sort of locker room conversation. If this happens, just nip it in the bud right there. Just make sure that your kids hear you stand up for it so that they also have the words to stand up for it. I mean, this can happen with anyone, well-intentioned.
Yes.
But not tolerated.
Yeah. I mean, Leslie, you've heard this. I know you've heard this. With four boys, I hear this all the time. But boys will be boys, right? They say this all the time. Boys will be boys. No. It's dangerous. It's dismissive. It holds boys to a lower standard than girls. It's not okay. It contributes to rape culture. No. Boys will not be boys. Boys will be men. Don't do that. You know, they will be kind humans. That's what they will be, just like the girls. So, you guys, if you're hearing this boys will be boys stuff, also nip that, because that's contributing as well.
It is. And watch your compliments. I think a lot of times we are quick to want to engage with people and to want to connect with them. And so often, if we don't know someone that well, the first thing that comes to mind is often a physical attribute. And so we call out that, we give attention to that. And we've talked about it here before, but instead of doing that, instead of, you know, telling a stranger that, like, you like their hair or whatever, just try not to, because you're putting attention onto that person. Yeah. You don't have the relationship to back it up. And if you do have sort of a relationship, or even if you're just being introduced to a girl, maybe it's your friend's daughter or your child's friend, whatever, ask what they're reading, ask what they're into, ask what their favorite subject is, if you feel that you need to engage or fill the silence. But it's hard, but try not to focus on the physical in those moments of engagement.
Yeah. I also think it's really, really important that, listeners, if you're not there yet, if you don't see rape culture in the same way as maybe we do or your friends do, if they're telling you about it, if they're posting on social media, don't say that that's not rape culture. You know, that's how it's contributed, by saying, oh, no, dismissing it. Oh, no, you're overreacting. Oh, no. Remember that the victims get to decide whether they're victimized. Nobody else gets to decide that. If it offends me, it offends me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your intention was.
Right.
If it's offensive, it's offensive. So if you're not there yet, just don't say anything. You immediately think, oh, no, that's not a big deal, then just shut up. Like, the end of story, you know? Because that's also how it's perpetuated, is people, oftentimes women, saying, no, it's no big deal, then dismisses the rest of the women. Well, you can't dismiss other people's story like that, right? That's not a kind or compassionate thing to do. The more appropriate thing to do then is to be quiet and just acknowledge the other person's humanity, even if it's a different experience than yours.
Yeah. I think, finally, we have to name it. It's hard to say the word rape or rapist, because, I mean, rape is just a terrible, horrible thing, but we have to call rapists. Brock Turner is not an ex-Stanford swimmer. He's a rapist. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby, let's stop referring to him as America's grandfather. He is a rapist.
Yeah.
Watch your headlines. Write to newspapers that are making that mistake.
Yeah.
Name it. Ugh. Wow. I know we've said this throughout, but this is not a comprehensive conversation.
Right.
You know, we're talking about this podcast. We were planning this. We thought of 100 different things that we wanted to discuss, but we just didn't have time. So we didn't get into the effects of rape culture on the LGBTQ community. We didn't get into the specifics of how our history, just as a culture, has affected women of color specifically. There are so many different ways that we could have gone with this conversation, but what we've done is we've compiled some really great links in our show notes, so please do make sure you go to the website right now after this podcast finishes and read about these other issues and about these other things to think about, and comment on Facebook with different articles that have helped you understand this concept more completely.
Mm-hmm. Woof is right. I feel like for sure I'm going to have a little, what do they call that? Hangover?
A vulnerability hangover
mm-hmm. a little bit tomorrow. But for now, you guys, let's get into the dare. We always close it with the dare. Today's no different. Mama Bears, today we dare you to use your voice. Use your platform and your Mama Bear spirit to call out rape, assault, and the myriad of ways rape culture plays out in our lives. Don't let anyone tell you that you're being too sensitive or that you need to just get over it. Name it and then raise your kids, your nephews, nieces, whatever, and or your friends even. Get them to hold men to this higher standard. Dismantle hypermasculinity. Do not allow men to excuse behavior with quote-unquote locker room talk. And don't stand for any objectification, right? Call this out. But to our male listeners, and I know you're out there because you guys email us, you tell your wives and they tell us, right? The dare is even bigger. This is on you, you guys. We dare you to call out your friends and your family if you hear this kind of talk happening, no matter how casual. We don't believe for a second that you need to have a daughter or a wife to know that this is wrong. Even if this is the first time you've heard the phrase rape culture or heard it explored to such an extent, you can change and you can begin to start ripples of change within your social circle. Listeners, today we just want to dare you to no longer be okay with that's just the way it is. And we need you to put things in motion so that our kids' generation will end up saying that's just the way it was. This is big but important work, and because we know how big your mama bear can be, we know you can do it. And together, we really can change this for our daughters and our sons.
Mm, we can. I do. I believe it, Tessie. Mm-hmm. I do. So thanks for listening today. As always, you can reach out and respond. You know, tell us what you're thinking about this episode, about this whole culture that we live in. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat. You can email us if you have, you know, additional thoughts or concerns, or if you have someone who you think would be a great guest on this show who might shed more light on this really serious and really, really important topic.
Yeah.
So find us, keep thinking about this. We challenge you to make this part of what you think about today mm-hmm. and every day, and come back on Monday where we will interview and hopefully like find our joy again.
Just it's there somewhere. We'll get it back, you guys. Thank you so much for coming with us and for bearing with us as we try to figure some things out, you guys. We will see you back here on Monday. Have a good week.
Have a good week.